Well, we're going to spend a little time wandering through Wisconsin to our National Historic Landmarks, and we're going to be doing that with Mary Bergen. It's great to have her back. She's from Madison. She writes the Roads Traveled column that appears in several daily newspapers in Wisconsin. She's online as well with it at roadstraveled.com, roads with an S, roadstraveled.com. She's the author of Hungry for Wisconsin, A Tasty Guide for Travelers, and Sidetracked in Wisconsin, both from Itchy Cat Press. She's a member of the Midwest Travel Writers Association and the Society of American Travel Writers. And we're heavy into the travel period here in the state. And what better when you're traveling around to take a look at some of our National Historic Landmarks. We'll be visiting with her about them and certainly taking your questions and comments as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Mary Bergen, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Larry. It's a bright, sunny day in Madison.
A bright, sunny day in Madison after some torrential rains in southern Wisconsin. Actually, even in, we got a little rain in the northern part of the state, which I was really happy to see.
Right, they really need it there.
Oh, they really need it there. And we have a new National Historic Landmark, but first let's talk about what's a National Historic. How do we get a place to be a National Historic Landmark?
Well, it's quite a complicated process, and it's for the very best national treasures that we have. The National Park Service oversees this program and explains that National Historic Landmarks are historic places that show exceptional value or quality in illustrating or interpreting the heritage of the United States. So nationwide, there are about 2,500 National Historic Landmarks. Now, if you compare that to the National Register of Historic Places, that's a program that designates places worthy of preservation, but there are more than 80,000 such properties under that program. So this is the landmark
really
designation is a much more elite status. With National Historic, the National Register, it's said that almost every county in the United States has at least one property to qualify. So they're all good, but this is a little bit of a more special designation.
Cut above the rest. Well, and here we have the latest in, of the our National Historic Landmarks, the Aldo Leopold Shack and the Leopold Legacy Center. Excuse me. Yeah.
Right. The dedication was held recently in the spring, and it is the 40th National Historic Landmark for Wisconsin. The Aldo Leopold Shack and Farm are a part of this designation. That's about 264 acres, I guess.
So what's when it becomes a National Historic Landmark, something like that, what does that mean then in terms of are we able to walk through it? What happens?
Well, it's my understanding that the landmarks are a mix of public places and private places.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so not everything is public, but this property certainly is. The Aldo Leopold Foundation encourages people to visit, get to know more about the land ethic that was a part of Aldo Leopold's life and legacy. There are workshops, trails to walk, self-guided tours of the property, or if you go on a Saturday, you can take a guided tour.
And the Legacy Center itself, what do we find in that Legacy Center?
It's the administrative offices for the Aldo Leopold Foundation, but also a visitor center. There's a visitor center component, and so a couple of videos to watch that explain what that area is all about historically and what work is done there today to help propel the Leopold legacy and principles of land conservation.
So it's an impressive center?
It is, and it's impressive in many ways, but including its platinum LEED certification status. Platinum is the highest level that a sustainable building design can earn from the U.S. Green Building Council. And LEED is the acronym for, Leadership in... energy, education, and design, I think.
Well, you'd expect.
Yeah.
If it's connected with Leopold.
And most of the building... The vast majority is made from the pine that was, gleaned from the Leopold forest, mm-hmm. the plantings that were done long ago.
Oh, very cool. Mary Bergen, our guest, as we've been talking a bit about the Leopold Legacy Center and the Elder Leopold Shack as part of the latest of our National Historic Landmarks. We certainly are going to be talking about more of them as we move along today, and you may have some questions as well as we do that. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And maybe you're planning a trip this summer in a particular area of the state, want to know what to find there in terms of historic landmarks. Give us a call and we'll fill you in as best we can. 1-800-642-1234. And maybe we could talk, just to give people an idea of the kinds of things that qualified here in Wisconsin for this National Historic Landmark. What are some of the other ones on that list?
Oh, a few of the places I think are quite well known. The USS Cobia, it's a World War II submarine that's a part of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc. Mm-hmm. The Pabst Theater in Milwaukee, this wonderful ornate building, has been around since 1895. The fourth oldest operating theater in the United States.
I did not
realize that until I was doing a little bit of research this morning. The Little White Schoolhouse in Ripon, the birthplace of the Republican Party. Rock County's Milton House, which was an important Underground Railroad stop before the Civil War. That's on the list. Close to my heart, the First Unitarian Society Meeting House in Madison.
In Madison, yeah.
This is my faith community, and this was a building designed by Frank Lloyd Wright and constructed by, in large part, by members of the church, and Frank Lloyd Wright was a member of the church. I know he was also a member of a congregation in Oak Park, but ours also. And the thing that that one has in common with Leopold Shack is that it is one of the newer landmarks in Wisconsin, but also. A big motivator to get the site designated as a landmark was the discussion that ensued about a new building project in the Leopold Shack property case. It was the building of the Legacy Center that made people think about how we really need to make sure we also preserve the shack and the farm in the process of this building plan. And at my church, at First Unitarian, it was an expansion of the congregation to the size where serious talk needed to go on about what happens next. We're getting too big for this wonderful little meeting house. And so that led to the building of an addition that is also very sustainable in design, gaining a gold from mm-hmm. LEED, meshing quite well with the original meeting house, but the landmark designation kind of ensures that it's not going to be demolished or that its design is not going to be altered in a historically inappropriate way, that kind of thing.
But the but you can still make changes, as obviously, to a place. It's not like, okay, once it's designated, then you can't touch it.
Yeah, but I think you need to be careful about the changes that are made with the national landmark status. Also, I think that in some circles there might be a misconception that because you have this designation, and the same thing for the National Register of Historic Places, just because you have the designation doesn't mean that the money is there to, you know, maintain and that type of thing, maintain the structure.
How are they usually maintained?
Well, I know that the designations will help an entity qualify for grant money, should it be available for historic preservation or maintenance. But I also believe that in large part these efforts happen because of the involvement of individuals or groups that take a personal interest and have a personal connection. Taliesin in Spring Green is a National Historic Landmark and has had challenges with structural problems for many years.
So this helps. This could help a place like Taliesin.
Yeah, and I wouldn't pretend to be an authority on that, but yeah, certainly, you know, that's a logical and important first step in making sure a place is preserved as much as you can have that be in your power.
You know, it's interesting to me that at least then two places in Wisconsin that are on the National Historic Landmark are connected to Frank Lloyd Wright.
That's so true.
I don't know if there are any more, but it'd be interesting to know.
Well, we have the Jacobs House in Madison. Isn't that also?
Yes.
But I don't think that's typically open to public tours.
No.
So, yeah, just scanning it, nothing else jumps out, but there could very well be.
So it's interesting that at least two, actually three places, so almost 10%, 8% or whatever, connected with one single individual. Well, we'll be talking about many more of the historic landmarks that we have here in Wisconsin and taking your questions as well as we move along today and visit with Mary Bergen of Madison. Writes the Roads Traveled column and focusing with her today. She gets around the state and gets to see and do all these things that most of us get to do like a couple of weeks a year when we go on vacation. She gets to do it more often than us, and so she knows a lot about it. And she'll be here to take your questions as we move along. News coming up, though. She'll be back with us right after the news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Traveling around Wisconsin, taking a look at some of the great sights to see, and especially zeroing in a little bit on our National Historic Landmarks with Mary Bergen, who writes the Roads Traveled column, appearing in several daily newspapers here in Wisconsin. And online, go online, take a look at roadstraveled.com. That's where you'll find her her column. So glad to have her with us. And certainly if you know, it would be interesting as there might be some locations in Wisconsin that you might think would qualify for a National Historic Landmark or at least a historic landmark, and I hope you'll join in with those comments as well as we visit with Mary today. Please join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call or shoot us an email at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, and we'd be glad to get you on the air. And just as an aside, you're working on some other things, too, an Earth-friendly travel book.
Right. I'm deep into the research for that. This time we'll certainly concentrate on Wisconsin, too, but also look a little bit broader, look into some of the other Midwestern states. So if people and you know, I'm not looking at a book about great parks or great hikes, that type of thing. I'm trying to make it more varied than that. Not that LEED certification is the only way to measure the seriousness of a business owner when it comes to sustainability, but it gets my attention. So something like the Red Stag Supper Club in Minneapolis is of interest to me, and I hope to see it in a few days, made of reclaimed materials and the emphasis on local food. When I was in St. Louis last week, I visited Cahokia Mounds, this prehistoric, sacred prehistoric community from long ago that has been nicely preserved and has a tremendous visitor center that will explain the significance of preserving.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's earth-friendly travel, too.
Sure, absolutely.
So...
And a few places in Wisconsin, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Got
a
few picked out.
Uh-huh.
Well, let's talk about some more of these sites that are on the National Historic Landmark list, because have you visited all of them?
You know, no, not by any means. I know of most of them, almost all of them, but yeah, some are private, or I perceive them to be private, so I would not visit. But
sure.
One of the ones, we were talking about Frank Lloyd Wright's influence, and one of the ones during the break that I noticed that I neglected to mention was the Johnson Wax Administration Building in Racine, which is open for tours on occasion. Prairie du Chien is well represented here.
Is that right?
Yeah, really well represented with Villa Louie and some of the historic homes that are open for tours. The Astor Fur Warehouse, you know, this fur trading heritage is well represented here. And when I look at the dates that these places became National Historic Landmarks, you know, it looks like there was Dousman Hotel, Prairie du Chien. Looks like there was a nice cluster of properties from Prairie du Chien that came in on the early end of all this.
So probably that could have been just a real push from that local area then.
Yeah, uh-huh. I'm going to guess it had to be a community-wide effort. Here's the Fort Crawford Military Hospital, also a part of this elite list.
And as you and I were talking, there's at least five and maybe six that are right connected.
Yeah.
I see the University of Wisconsin has at least three.
Mm-hmm. The Armory and Gymnasium, Dairy Barn, and Science Hall are listed here.
And the other interesting one to me was... And why not, I guess, our Wisconsin state capital.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. Yeah. That is here. Uh-huh. And it would be a logical choice for this designation.
Yep, absolutely. Give us a call with your questions or input here as we visit with Mary about the National Historic Landmarks and the other great things to see in the state. She also mentioned she's doing this book on earth-friendly travel, so you may have some ideas on what to include in or out of Wisconsin, at least in the Midwest, relating to that book as well. Number 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. We would love to hear from you. So we've got 40 sites in Wisconsin, five or six of them connected with Wright. We've got a few connected with the University of Wisconsin. And I'm seeing some connected with Robert La Follette as well, I believe, at least his home.
Mm-hmm. That's right, in Maple Bluff. And, you know, we mentioned Villa Louie. That's a state historic site, but also the Ringling Brothers Circus Quarters in Baraboo is on the list.
You know, I have not been to Villa Louie in a long, long time. In fact, I'm trying to remember when I was last there. It's been a long time. Have you been there recently?
No, I haven't been there recently either. But I know that they do some neat things like... special breakfast in this grand old Victorian house and or estate overlooks the Mississippi River. That estate was the house of the Dousman family.
He was That's what it was. Okay. I was trying to remember the background on that. He was a fur trader?
He dealt with a fur trading company. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the and they had, before we go back to the phones, just on that line again, didn't they have some sort of air conditioning system where they would cut, chop ice out of the...
I think you're right, yeah. I hadn't thought about that for a long time.
They would chop ice out of the river there, and then they would store it for summer in a shed, probably partially underground at least. And then the cool air from that shed, they had some sort of duct system, would cool the house.
Mm-hmm. So it would be things like that, along with the time in history, both when it was when an application was made out for this this distinction and its own place in history that would qualify it. Back to the Leopold shack and farm.
Yeah.
One of the things that I really liked during the dedication was a comment that Buddy Huffaker made. He's the executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation.
Yeah.
He said that distinction as a national landmark in this regard puts conservation on the same playing field as liberty and justice as a value to uphold.
Yeah. Nice comment.
Yeah, I really like that because I think it's a part of what we stand for in Wisconsin, and especially when it comes to this particular part of it.
Yeah. Let's take some calls. Jeff in Superior, we'll turn to you. Jeff, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good afternoon. Beautiful day up here. We got some sunshine today.
All right.
Yeah, I wanted to suggest a few ideas. In Superior, you know, we have the Martin Pattison Mansion, and they tore down the Summer White House when Calvin Coolidge was president. That used to be Central High School. But, you know, during World War II, they did a lot of shipbuilding in the North End, and there's probably, you know, Franklin Roosevelt once lived in Superior when he was years old, and the Dion quintuplet, didn't they launch some ships during the World War II era? I mean, there's a lot of historical places up here that aren't, I mean, even I went to public school here and I didn't learn about them.
Yeah.
Mm.
You learn about it as you grow up. And how do you bring attention to something like that if the community isn't really interested?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's important for someone to take the initiative. I mean, someone would have to do the work with the paperwork, that type of thing. The procedure itself is a part of the National Park Service website.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But just,
you know, that kind of historical walk through your own community is really valuable to children. I think it really should be done in local schools to build that sense of community pride. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with you on that, Jeff. And I think communities may be missing a bit of an opportunity there to build community within their own people, and also to as an attraction for others who are just coming to visit.
I agree. I think that the value can come from all kinds of directions. I mean, practical value, if you see historical value and you want to make sure that it's officially designated. But also, it's not on the list of, national landmarks, but you look at a community like Mineral Point. Mineral Point's pretty much the entire downtown area is on the National Register of Historic Places. And through that, I think they build a wonderful image based on history and then segueing into an artistic colony.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a definition, a way to define and distinguish, this fine community from others in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. Thanks.
As I grew older, I was more interested in a lot of the Native American sites, which became, assimilated into the white culture. So it's not just our own history as European settlers, but the Native people here, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good point because I had mentioned Cahokia Mounds in the St. Louis area, but also on our own list of National Historic Landmarks is the lesser known Aztalan.
Aztalan,
Yeah, and, you know, near Lake Mills in Jefferson County, an archaeological site that's associated with this Cahokia Mounds, a native community that existed from 1000 to 1300 AD, and then just kind of disappeared. And there's a lot of mystery that goes along with it. The way it was explained to me, you look at a lot of these South American ruins that exist as ruins today because the building materials were stone and things that would last the ages. In this part of the world, if we're using like mud and wood and that type of thing, all we have left really are the mounds and the contents of them to define who we were long ago.
Thanks again, Jeff, for calling. Let's turn to Robert in McGregor, Iowa. Hi, Robert.
Hi. I actually live south of McGregor, and it's interesting you're talking about mounds because I live about a quarter mile from the Snymagill Annex of the Effigy Mounds National Monument.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and there's a quarry that's operating, a limestone quarry that's operating about 1,000 feet from the mounds, and I'm trying to get them to stop anyway. Oh. But I had a question about, in Prairie du Chien, there was a little building that I saw that really interested me, and because I'd like to build one just like it. But it looks like a one-room octagonal rock structure, and and they were telling me that they thought it belonged to Governor Lucy at one time. Do you know anything about that? I thought it was a historical.
Yeah, you were breaking up a little bit there, but it was so you're
sorry.
So it was a rock, made of rock, but not octagonal.
It's octagonal. It's only a one room. It looks like a little cabin.
And it might have belonged to Governor Lucy at one point.
That's what I was told. Yeah, and that it's historical.
Mary, do you know anything about it?
I don't. I wish I could say that I did. Maybe someone from Prairie du Chien could call and
let
fill
us in. Fill us in, sure.
Is it part of anything else, or does it just kind of sit by itself?
It's sitting by itself.
Huh.
That's interesting.
There's a newer residence that is by it, and I stopped and asked them, but it's a group home of some sort.
Oh.
They said, that's just, they just use that for storage. There's nothing in it.
No. Well, maybe somebody from the area is listening in and can help us out. So stay listening, Robert.
Okay, I will.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And you can join in if you know a little bit about that particular structure, or if you have other questions as well. I hope you'll join us as we talk, as we travel around Wisconsin to our historic landmarks today with Mary Bergen. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, and we'd love to hear from you. As I look on this list of National Historic Landmarks, and by the way, where do we go for that? You can go online.
To the National Park Service site, so that would be nps.gov, I believe.
nps.gov, and then...
And then /NHL for National Historic Landmarks.
Okay. All right. So there we go. And... lots of callers coming up here online, so we'll take some calls next here, and we'll go to Colleen, I believe, is up. Let's go to Colleen. Colleen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question for Mary.
Sure.
I'm wondering, you had mentioned about other locations in the state. My family's going to the New Glarus area over the 4th of July, taking our kids, and I was wondering if you might have some suggestions or tips of something that would be culturally enriching for us as we spend our time there.
Sure.
Oh, you know, Greene County is, our cheese-making hub of the state, so that would be one stop in the New Glarus Monroe area to the cheese making visitor center.
Mm-hmm.
And We have, you know, New Glarus being of Swiss heritage. You'll see indications of a lot of that in the architecture and contents of the community. New Glarus Bakery is not necessarily a historical. Well, it is, though, you know, because they are authentic in their way of preparing their wonderful bakery, and you'll see some ethnic items there. Can't help but think about beer. You mentioned family, so you probably want things that are more
kid-oriented.
But, you know, the bike trail, is it the Sugar River Bike Trail, goes right into the area. So if you pack along your bikes, you'll have a wonderful ride between communities and
beautiful.
Connect with nature along the way.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Well, we're looking forward to it. Thank you for your suggestions.
Enjoy.
And the beer, I'd still
see, it's at the top of my list.
And we've got the New Glarus Brewery, and they do run tours.
Uh-huh, they do.
And frankly, I think the kids might enjoy a tour of the brewery, too, although they wouldn't be able to sample the beer afterwards.
But in nearby Monroe, Minhas Brewery also has tours. I think they make a pop.
Yep, they make a soft drink. That's right.
Yeah.
So you could do that as well, Colleen. Keep that in mind. Jim and Horicon, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Well, unfortunately, we don't have a brewery up around here. So. But anyway, there's a bike trail that goes up the west side of the Horicon Marsh. And
I've
there
biked
are
that.
Some mounds just out to the west of the marsh. And I was wondering if you had any idea, what people would have built those.
That area was a trade route, and there were still, up until a few years ago, there were still some trees that were standing from way back when the natives would literally take a small tree and bend it down in a particular direction, straight north. And it was used by the native peoples as they were coming through. And so that Horicon area was actually, I think there were many tribes, many native peoples who lived and worked and traded there. Now, I'm not sure. I'm trying to think of where you might go to find out more about that.
I think the Horicon area has a new interpretive center that opened this year, and that might be a good place.
Yeah, and that's, is that right in Horicon? No, it's right outside.
It's right outside.
Right outside.
Is it Highway 28, maybe?
Yeah, that could be it. But anyway, I check in there, Jim, and see what you can find out. Jackie in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I formerly lived up in Grafton, Port Washington area, and we have something in Port Washington that is a pebble house, and it came to my mind when your guest was talking about how things made out of stone really last. And when I first went to see it, I thought it was just going to be sort of, you know, pebbles in sort of a concrete type mixture, but it's very intricate and laid out in patterns, and it's amazing that someone would have taken the time to create this.
Is it a private property? It sounds like it might be.
I don't think so. I don't know if there's tours or anything. It's not a very large structure. It's actually looks to be the size of like a shed or a shack. I'm not really sure if it is private or not.
Well, that description, I don't know of the specific building, but it makes me think of the wonderful assortment of outsider art we have in Wisconsin, thanks to the preservation efforts of the Kohler Foundation. You know, under that category outsider art is installations and statues or what have you, art that's put together by people who were not educated to be artists. And probably the best known example is the Wisconsin Concrete Park
Yeah.
Outside of Phillips.
Phillips, Wisconsin.
Yeah. The work of retired farmer and maybe lumberjack. I think he was a lumberjack who just put together hundreds of concrete figures using embellishments of whatever.
Whatever he could find.
Yeah, broken beer bottles to plates and what have you. So I'm not saying that that's what Jackie's describing, but it made me think of our wonderful outsider art.
Lots to think about and lots to see and lots to do here in Wisconsin, Marion. Thank you so much for taking time to come by and be with us again. Your website again now to read your column?
It's roadstraveled.com, RoadsTraveled. And, I do the column weekly. If you are in an area where your newspaper doesn't carry it, please just shoot me an email. I also can put you on an automatic distribution list.
Perfect. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Larry.
Mary Bergen, we'll have her back, and we'll talk with her again about things to do here in Wisconsin. And thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.